Back again.
Ah, riffing.
Back with a new show, same as the old show.
I can't get enough of that theme music.
There, here's a little bit more of it.
I love it. It's just riffing.
Now it's done.
It's solid. Solid theme music.
I mean, it's the only one we have, so it better be solid.
Well, I mean, we could always ask for another one from our composer, our in-house composer.
Yeah, he's busy with other projects at the moment, but maybe he could make some time for it.
That would be nice.
Maybe like a electro-punk jazz.
Oh, you know what? If we had electro-punk jazz country,
yeah,
we would be leading in all of the podcast standings.
Number one in iTunes.
We'd be a number one seed in the March Madness of podcasts.
We would be the Kentucky of podcasts.
Ooh.
Topical.
They're getting lucky in Kentucky.
That's what they say, although for Virginia's for lovers, so.
I mean, well, do you always get lucky with a lover?
Yeah. Lucky in life, unlucky at love. Isn't that what they always say?
Oh, they do say that.
Yeah. So I guess not.
Maybe.
So, if you're getting lucky in Kentucky, it's probably not love-related.
If you're getting lucky in Kentucky, you're obviously at the casino.
Yeah, I mean, most lottery winners all time, Kentucky.
That's a fact that you can look up somewhere,
per capita, yeah. Most lottery tickets bought, though, per capita, so makes sense.
That makes sense.
That's probably on the internet somewhere.
Statistics!
Yeah!
Coming at ya!
Coming at ya!
Prime Flick Statistics! Dicks.
I like it.
It worked.
Did we ever decide what they're what we're officially referring to our audience as?
I think we're calling them Flixers.
The Flixers.
What's up, Flixers?
What's up, Flixers? Another week. Another couple properties to discuss. I never know how to say, it's always too long to say movies and television shows.
Yeah, because we do both here.
Yeah, it's big and small screen.
Well, I mean, it's all kind of on the small screen because you're streaming it.
True. Well, and that's strange because today's topic we're actually going to talk about I'm putting this in air quotes for the listener.
I can see the air quotes, listeners.
I haven't done them yet.
Okay.
I'm just giving you a peace sign right
okay.
now. Okay. Okay. One of my fingers.
Peace signs.
That's
oh, enough. That was it.
There
right
it is.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Television shows. I put that in air quotes.
Yeah.
Because they're not on television.
No, but they are series.
Yes. They're serialized.
Serialized stories.
Stories.
Made in the format
of television.
Of television.
And they would compete alongside traditional television shows.
Would and do.
For awards and such.
Yes.
So, given that we're actually a podcast that we're equal opportunity here, unless you're Hulu, we pretty much.
Right.
We cover you.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're Crackle or HBO Go.
Right. HBO Now.
But if you're... Nice. It hasn't even come out yet. Do you have your beta already?
No. We were just talking about this. The amount of money that I spend on streaming,
mm-hmm.
I do not know that I have another slot.
Oh, yeah. You have to be judicious with your slots.
Yeah. I have very few slots for streaming. And
your dance card's full.
My dance card is filling up with streaming slots.
Streaming slots. Anyway, Netflix, Amazon
Prime.
We're talking about
TV-ish shows.
We've gotten to the point where these two companies.
Yes.
Functionally, sort of like networks, I guess, in this context.
They're developing properties into series.
They're making shows that are winning awards.
Yeah.
I don't know which awards, but I know they've won some.
They've won a few. I'm pretty sure Jeffrey Tambor won the Golden Globe.
I believe so.
Yeah.
And I think that this... So, spoiler alert, we're talking about Transparent today.
Yeah, well,
Amazon
we just want to make sure that that's in this sunlight.
They might have thought
up front.
They might have thought you were talking about the new season of Arrested Development that came out on Netflix, which he was also
he was also a part of.
He would not have won an Emmy for that, but
yeah.
or a Golden Globe.
Yeah, but just to shed some light on the thing that we're talking about, we're talking about Transparent.
Transparent.
We want to make sure that you can see through
yes
all of our shtick to what we're actually trying to say.
Because that's very important to us. I would think if someone were to say, describe PrimeFlix in one word, it'd be transparent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I almost said translucent, but that's a little too far.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
transparent,
we're not translucent.
Yeah.
We're definitely not opaque, I'll tell you that much.
No, definitely not.
People
or
can
oblique.
See right through us.
That is true. In fact, sometimes I feel like people don't even see me. So,
yeah.
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 Yeah, so transparent, I think it won best, I think it won a Golden Globe for best, like, comedy or musical. It was like a really
yeah,
weird...
that's the Golden Globe
yeah.
sort of categories.
Which is
like
odd.
Comedy or musical and drama. Because apparently you can't be a musical and be a drama.
It's such a strange categorization scheme.
Well, I mean, it's tough, right? Because really, why are we comparing things at all?
That's true.
You know, I was listening the other day. I'm going to go on a tangent here, so bear with me. I was listening to the other day to a podcast with Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes.
The filmmaker.
P.T.
And
his friends.
Yep. P.T.A. He's Canadian. And he was talking about when his film There Will Be Blood was up against No Country for Old Men. And he basically was like, how do you even compare these?
Hmm.
Like, first of all, that was an incredible year because those two movies were both incredible.
They're two of my favorite films.
I don't know. I had a hard time choosing between the two.
I actually think that they're similarly nihilistic.
Yeah.
And I think they're very equally comparable, but I could understand how he, as the director,
yes,
would see them differently.
Right. And so his point was like, why do we even put these in these categories? But, you know, awards, A, are necessary to raise the profile of particular properties.
Sure.
And B, are a nice way to recognize fine work.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what we have here.
And I can't speak for Jill Soloway, the creator of this show, but I will try anyway.
Okay.
I think that this show is a lot about not fitting in.
Yes.
And so it's kind of ironic, you know, whatever you want to say. Ever since Alanis Morissette sang that song, I'm not really sure what that word means.
You don't know what ironic is.
But it's sort of unfortunate, or not unfortunate, I don't know. There's just something about the fact that it's just kind of funny. That, like, oh, we can't categorize this show.
Yeah.
And the show is all about categorization, how... We
and,
have this
and the
rigid
inability
kind of,
to do so
to
with
feel like you're
people.
In between,
yeah, exactly.
You know, to feel as a person as though you don't fit in one, you check one box, or you're expected to check one box, but you want to check the other.
Well, and it's not just him.
Sure,
it's all the characters in this show find it difficult at certain points to fit into what they're supposed to fit into.
Right.
Right.
So let's rewind for a second just to
I'd love to
make sure we're all on the same page. This show is about a father of three children who in his later years, after the kids have all grown and left the house and have their own issues to deal with, own families, some of them is divorced, you know, basically, you know, comes out and says, I'm a transgendered person. I have felt my whole life that I'm in the wrong body, you know, and is sort of taking the steps toward that. And the show is almost entirely about how the family reacts to that and the things that he's going through in his transition to become who he feels that he really is.
Yep.
And it is like a fantastic name for a show. Like transparent, I don't know. It works on
multiple levels without, like, I'm saying that not to be funny. It actually, like,
it does.
That's the point.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, and I couldn't think of a better way to. And that's the basis of what we're talking about. And in case you haven't seen the show, it's, you know, they're 20 to 30 minute episodes. There's seven of them in the first season, I think, or somewhere about
that. Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
you could watch it in an afternoon, and You probably will, because it is it does grip you as a show. I found it very, and I always find this because, and this is also something that I just want to caveat up front, that I just don't understand. Like, I'm There's a lot. As older I get, the more I realize I don't understand about the world, or I'm unfamiliar with things about the world. And I like to think of myself as an accepting person, but I also recognize that, like, I have no concept of how other people's lives happen and what happens in their lives. And if it's a experience that's so far outside of my own, I want to know about it and learn about it. And this show, I'm not a trans person myself, so I can't say if it's actually, you know, accurate an accurate portrayal.
Yeah, which I've actually experience.
I've heard is, but sure. I can't say for sure. But it's always just fascinating to me to just see a different experience portrayed on the screen. And this is a show you'd never see on network television.
Yeah, it would have a really tough time.
Yeah,
because, you know, all the little old ladies and little old men in, Intolerance USA will be writing in going, I don't want to see this. This should people have children.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. What are you teaching the children? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Acceptance?
Yeah.
yeah, no, but I whenever we talk about any show or movie that covers a subject like this, that I would say is controversial in an age related fashion, such that there's disagreements between younger and older people on the matter at hand, which is a lot of things.
And we're not saying all older people. We're just saying,
right,
like,
in general,
like the type of people that would find this objectionable on network television would most likely be older.
Sure.
You know, and I don't even know if that's a fair characterization.
Sure.
But it is the sense that I don't think that my parents would necessarily be comfortable with this. And I probably shouldn't be saying that on the podcast, but, you know, it's said.
Well, so you're going exactly where I was going with this, where my parents are very different people. My mom's still kind of like a traditional person, but she's a lot more accepting of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we... I watch a show like this. I know where my dad stands on it. I would never even have to think about how he stands, because he would be squarely against this. He wouldn't understand it. He would think it was just some weird perversion or something that this person's going through. He might even think it's funny, which is funny to label it a comedy because it's not really a comedy.
Right.
My mother, on the other hand, I can't know where she would stand.
That's
I always want to know.
That's kind of fun.
Like, I would like to have her watch it just to see how she feels about it. I feel like she would be accepting, but still think it was like kind of funny or strange. You know, she loved like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, right? Well, who doesn't?
Yeah. I don't know if she would categorize it in her head as, and I think the show does such a great job of portraying the real anxiety associated with this type of situation. So I think she would feel for that. And if her opinion was toward the, well, this is strange, or, you know, it's like a phase or whatever, or this person needs help, if she had that feeling, I don't think it would persist through the show.
But that's what's so great about the show is, and shows like this, and I feel like we're spending a lot of time kind of saying, you know, this genre or whatever, or this sort of social movement. But what's so great about the show is that it's portraying him as a human being, so that even if you had particular feelings, just black and white on paper about the way things should be, hopefully this addresses some of the human side of it. And you go, you know, maybe I should rethink, or maybe I should be a little more open,
right,
or, you know, it's... It just does such a wonderful job of showing him as a person, you know, and then also dealing with this thing.
Yeah, and that's told slightly through the lens of, at least the show kind of uses interactions with others to, because you know him, you know, like you see him. Mm-hmm. And then he just identifies as she, and eventually you're immediately like on the side of the main character.
Yeah.
You're saying, yeah, you know, like there's never really a question about, the authenticity of it or anything like that. You're right there with it, but it, just like anything, the stigma, the anxiety, everything about it is because of other people. It's because of the perception of how they'll react. And a lot of the show is told is told that way. It's not only how does his wife react, how do his kids react, but how do their significant others react? How do his mailman react? How does everybody around him react to it? And that's what I think is the most compelling moments in the show are when that happens. And especially with his kids, he has three kids who are very different. They're similar in that they're all kind of from this sort of, I would say sort of like a
like trope or
a trope of people of like Gen Xers or people who are like maybe like between Gen X and millennials where they're older sort of, arrested development. You know,
yeah, that's like, it's exactly how I felt about it.
Types of people who just can't, they're in their 30s or late 20s and they can't get their lives together, or they have a life that most people would envy but don't feel that it's right or whatever. So it's
not for them.
It's not just about his identity, the main characters, but it's also about, you know, everyone else's as well.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I find even the moments where each of the children are trying to find themselves just as compelling, and it makes a nice mirror to what he's going through. What his thing is, that he's going through that in his transition is very obvious. You can point to it and say in one sentence, you know, he is transitioning from living as a man to living as a woman. Mm-hmm. You know, very simple. Their stuff is just as important, but they haven't figured out what it is yet.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know what they want yet, and they're searching for it. And it's, I think it's fascinating as sort of a foil to what's going on there with him to see that.
Yeah. So let's talk, let's play a clip actually. Let's play the clip of, this is him, when his daughter, his eldest daughter is first, learning about this transition. I don't want to give too much away, but it's when he's the first time that he has this conversation with any of his children. And this is sort of by accident.
Yeah. It's quite unexpectedly. She catches him.
He like catches her doing something, and then she also happens to like, he wasn't expecting her to be in his home, and he comes home dressed as a woman.
Right.
And you know, that's probably enough.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry. I'm just trying. Can you just help me out here? Are you saying that you're going to start dressing up like a lady all the time?
Honey, all my life. My whole life I've been dressing up like a man.
And that's very powerful. And there's lots of moments like that. And each of the kids kind of reacts the way you'd expect them to based on the little bit you know about them as characters. But it's still nonetheless very compelling. So I think we go on and on about everything that we love about this show.
Yeah.
The one thing I do want to talk about, because I know it's a point of contention between both of our views on this, is that I can't stand any of the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot about why this is the case. They're supposed to be self-absorbed people who haven't figured stuff out and are, you know, not sensitive to what's going on with their father because they're trying to deal with their own stuff. And they alternate between just complete disbelief to laughter to whatever about this situation. I don't know if it's because in my head I go, yeah, everybody's got problems, dude. You know, like everybody doesn't know if they're doing what they want to do or whatever. It doesn't mean you have to be a jerk to your father who's going through this thing or whatever. But I don't know if it's like, I have problems too, and that I don't like to see other people's problems, you know, and maybe that's why I don't usually watch these fully dramatic shows for the same reason. Like, it's like, I don't need to see that shown to me because I see too much of
a reflection.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. I don't know.
I can understand that.
But I just, they irk me a bit. And I thought that, they were going to start out being these jerks and that they were going to, as time goes on, develop into fully formed characters. And I didn't feel that in this first run, and it's admittedly short, that there was much development, as people, mm-hmm. you know, even though time, you know, it, through these episodes passes, it didn't feel that they were at least portrayed in these first few episodes, in any way that would make me feel for them or try to understand them better or whatever. And so Yeah.
And you watched the whole season, right?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've only watched the first three episodes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of that's our low bar for for being able to review a television show.
And you know, a little inside baseball here. That's kind of when you read reviews out there on the internet. That's actually usually all the critics have seen as well.
Yeah.
They usually get an advanced set of like three episodes to watch of a show.
Right. I think. I don't know. I don't find them as annoying as you do. Mm-hmm. And I think for the reason that I just talked about, you know, that I find their problems just as compelling. Mm. Like, I think that fundamentally they're nice people.
Okay.
I think that they're nice people who let some things like get in their way. And yeah. I find that really human about them because I feel like that's who I am. Mm. Right. You know, I mean, sometimes I'll just be at home. And I'll say something, you know, insensitive to my spouse. And like later, I'm like, why would I have done that? That's a horrible thing. But it's because I'm a human being, you know, and my day affects me, and my, you know, the weather outside affects me, and whatever. And I'm like. Like that's just not a very nice thing to say. I hope I, you know,
right.
And I think we all do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of what how they're processing his life changes.
Yeah.
As some of that,
sure.
You know, like he's like, hey, I'm gonna sell your childhood home. What? You can't do that. I just had a shitty day at work.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
It's
a good description. It's a good description. They can't get out of their own way.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that he's not being fully transparent with them at the beginning because he sells their childhood home.
Yeah.
Before he tells them why.
Right.
You know, and he's intending to.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So they have this in the first episode, they have this dinner.
Yeah.
Where he calls them all to the house so that he can come out to them.
Yeah, and they think he's dying or...
And they think he's dying or whatever. And instead of coming out, he just tells them that he's moving.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a little unfair of him to expect them to be in a place to receive this news without giving them forewarning that he's giving them the news.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they do come to the table with... To the table.
Yes,
that's a nice pun. With their own baggage, with their own day, with their own life, you know, and so the nice part about like when he does tell the daughter, that's in I think the second episode. The nice part about that happening is that it's just forced into the crucible.
Yeah,
we've come to this moment and now it has to happen and now she can get on with it. And you see that in the third episode that follows how comfortable she becomes with it so very quickly.
Right. Yeah, she's the most sort of outwardly accepting of it of the three. You haven't gotten to the later episodes, but he really drags it on with his son.
Yeah. Well, he says in the episodes I've seen, he says that's the one he's most concerned about.
Right. He's worried about how his son will react to it because of the whole masculinity thing and everything like that. And that, you know, daughters, he expects his daughters would be more accepting in general. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I think this probably also happens with people who are coming out for various reasons that it is a terrifying thing to do because you don't know if the person's going to just completely ignore you, you know, like hate you,
cut you out of their life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where you just delay it and delay it and delay it and delay it and delay it until eventually something happens where you have to tell them someone walks in on you when you're, you know, or someone else tells that person for you.
Yeah.
Which is
worse.
Worse. Yeah. And so it's really interesting. I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, the show is more full and more interesting because there are multiple children, because he has to talk to each of them and each have their own issues and are very different. Seeing that is probably covering more of the spectrum of reactions that you'd get in that situation.
Yeah.
And is a little bit then more true to life of what this would be like.
That's a really good point. Yeah. They represent three different opportunities to tell a different story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I can imagine that would, I mean, it definitely makes it more dramatically interesting. It probably is more true to life for a lot of people who've gone through this. So yeah. And I do like that they go out of their way to get actual, transgender actors to play a lot of the characters. Yeah. And stuff. And I've read elsewhere that's, you know, one of the big, you know, selling points of the movie to people in that community is like, or the show is that, you know, this is coming from a place of somebody who understands this, that the writer herself went through this. And so, right. Not, she wasn't transitioning, but, her parent,
she
was,
had a I parent, believe. I believe. Yeah.
And so, you know, so yeah, so I think it's, you also too, in these situations, you wonder, like I wonder, because I don't know, as I said, whether it's true to form, you know, whether this is, these are just contrived things for television, or whether this is actually very true to the experience of someone who this happened right. for. And so I like that aspect of this show, in that it does seem that people who know what it's like are saying, yes, this is, you know, an accurate portrayal. And
well, and I also think that you get some clue into that because of the thoughtfulness that each character goes through.
Yeah.
With all of this, you right. know, it, we, there's a side story with the oldest daughter, the same one who finds out first.
Yes.
About her father, where she's married to a man, but she was, in college. She was in a long-term relationship with a woman, and she's recently reconnected with a woman and, has begun an affair with her. Mm-hmm. And she's really trying to decide whether she wants to be with her husband or with this person she's having an affair with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even more complicated because of the gender differences between the two people that she's, you know,
right.
that she's with. So like not only would she, if she wanted to be with this woman, she would not only be saying, I don't want to be in my marriage anymore.
Yeah.
But she would also be saying, you know, I want to be in a relation, in a same sex relationship.
Right.
And so she would have to go through a lot of the similar things, I think, mm-hmm. that her father has to go through in order to tell the people she loves.
'Cause she does have a family. She has a husband and a
yep.
kid.
I exactly. think one kid. One, yeah. one or two.
One
yeah.
or two. This is one of the shows where I expect you'll probably end up watching the other episodes.
Yeah.
And we should, I don't know if we'll come back to it at some point and just mention it, but, there's a lot more that happens in those few episodes you haven't seen with these other characters and their relationships. So I'm curious, once you see those episodes, how you feel about them and okay. what happens. But I don't want to spoil it for you because no. you haven't seen it yet. So
can we touch briefly? We talked a lot about the content and a lot about the plots. But let's talk about kind of the stylistic things about this show, because that's also what makes it great.
Yeah.
The use of music in this show is not unprecedented, but it's uncommon and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
One of the characters is a music producer. That's what he does for a day job.
Yeah.
The son. And I think that must have come out of either the writer or someone in the room helping create this show knowing a lot about music, because they use older tunes
sure
so well, like to set the mood, mm-hmm. To like get the characters to identify with each other, like because they talk about music with his day job. Even the sort of seemingly vapid you know, young songstresses that he's messing around with seem to have a really good grasp of good music.
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the music in it. I mean, I like the intro music to it. I like the use of music. And that's something that I think is true not just of this show, but it's even true of most, I think, new television. There's a recognition that the music matters a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, and it is more cinematic
yes.
with the music. You know, and it makes it more dramatic. It makes, you know, it adds a lot to it. And I think about other shows that have come out in the last like 15 years and their use of music. Like Weeds was really good in like the first four seasons of all the music that it used. Orange is the New Black has some really good music usage. We talked about that on a long time ago on this podcast.
And I know you're not a big fan of the show, and I'm like kind of a medium fan of the show, but Parenthood uses music incredibly well.
Yeah.
Even that show, and I loved the show when it was on, but Chuck used to use music incredibly well. Like they would use a lot of like hip indie bands to layer in scenes.
Yeah, and it's a stark contrast between typical network television, where the only music that gets used is I think it's like agreed that it's only music by The Who. That's all they can use.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's all it's under contract.
Looking
at CBS.
You, CBS.
Yeah, so they signed some kind of long-term deal with Pete Townsend back in the day. They were just like, can't use anything that wasn't off of one of our albums. So we should move on to the other show that we want to discuss. So Transparent's an Amazon original, so you can only find it on Amazon. They actually do have, I believe they're allowing anybody to watch the first episode for free.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
And if you have Amazon Prime, then you can actually watch the rest of the show. So, it might give you a taste of what the programming is looking like on Amazon, and it's looking pretty good. So, you know, if you're looking to cut your cord and you're looking for some alternatives, Prime's not the worst thing that you could do with that. But
if I could sum up the show in a single word, or if you could sum up the show in a single word, what would you say?
Transparent. It's a trick. Compelling. I don't know.
That okay. I think that's good. I would say that it's beautiful.
Yeah, like, that's true.
I'm not like a poetic guy.
Sure.
But this show is like watching lyrical poetry. It's just really like from the opening credits to the end credits. Like even just sitting and listening to the song they play over the end.
Right.
I think it's got that poetic quality about it, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very aesthetically pleasing and just about every way. So check it out. Our other show is a little bit lighter hearted, but not necessarily.
No, it's got some darker tones to it as well, and I think that's what makes it interesting.
That's what makes it atypical and maybe more worthy of attention than the typical show in its genre. We're talking about a little show called BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman.
Which was released, it's a Netflix original. It was released, I believe, back in December of last year.
I think sometime last fall.
Okay, so fall. Mm-hmm. I think I watched it in December, so maybe it wasn't quite out until then. It's an animated show for adults, most definitely is for adults. It is following the antics of a washed-up TV star who is also a horse.
Yep.
It's like a horse person.
Well, that's the thing you had to understand about the whole world, right? Yes. In this world that BoJack Horseman is set in, people live alongside with anthropomorphized animals.
Right.
And there's no explanation of it.
Yep.
And there's no like justification for it.
Right.
It's just that's the way this world exists.
Exactly. And he was on a TV show called Horsin' Around in the 90s, which was essentially a not so thinly veiled version of like Full House
or any of those
dad TV shows.
Yep.
Family. What was the other one? What was the one with Kirk Cameron?
Growing Pains. Yeah.
This one,
more specifically, probably something like Full House because it's a single dad raising three children. So, very much in that sort of like really like sometimes mushy sort of really safe family genre.
Exactly.
TGIF, that sort of thing.
So you fast forward, 20 years into the future, and he's now washed up. He's got a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. He lives quite well because he's got a lot of money.
He's got all the residuals coming in, man.
Exactly.
His show was incredibly popular. It was on for like 9 years, they say.
All right, and he has a permanent house guest who lives on his couch. apparently, which is pretty common in LA, I guess. His ex. Ex-girlfriend is a cat named Princess Carolyn, who's also his agent. he deals with Penguin Publishing, which is actually a penguin. And it's just, it's got so many sight gags and animal jokes and puns. And but it's really, and we're, you know, this is like my take on the, what I think of this show is that it's actually incredibly, it's an incredibly poignant, like, portrayal of a depressed person.
Yeah, I agree.
He's you can see parts in the show where he recognizes that the stuff he's doing or saying is driving the people around him away from him, but he can't stop himself. And that's like incredibly compelling as a you know, so it's like it reels you in with all of these animal puns and jokes and whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you sit there and you actually listen, you're really brought into this guy's world, and it's on par with it has a lot of similarity, I suppose I should say, to like Californication, the David Duchovny show. Mm-hmm. That was on I don't know if it's still on, but it was on Showtime, I think, back in the day. But in this case, it's actually he's a good person, which I don't think was really the case in Californication. but yeah, so there's all these other characters. His foil in the show is voiced by Paul F. Tompkins. He's a dog who is brilliant. Also on a show. I guess
he's a golden retriever.
Yeah.
He's a gold lab, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a yellow lab, I guess you'd call him. Yeah. And he's this anthropomorphized dog.
Yeah.
And he is exactly what an anthropomorphized dog would be like.
Exactly.
He's very excited. He's very excitable. Yeah. He has tennis balls everywhere.
Yes. He thinks that Bojack is his best friend.
Yes.
When Bojack really can't stand him at all.
Can't stand him.
And sees him as like a rival.
Yeah.
Because he was also on a successful show as like Sister, essentially, or like similar, like hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It was the same show that Bojack was on, but on a different network competing head to head.
Right.
So it was again another single dad situation. Hanging with Mr. Cooper is a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he wasn't the father in that particular show, but it's the same dynamic.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's about this one person, and then they have little people around them.
Yeah, exactly.
And his show was like, if Bojack Horseman's show was the artistic form of this,
yeah,
I think Mr. Peanut Butter's show was the lowest common denominator in Bojack's mind.
Right.
Which to you and I think would mean that it had very few differences.
Yes.
But I think that's the way they like to portray this relationship.
Right. Bojack thinks that he is better and that, you know, he was doing something that was more authentic. And,
yep.
Yeah. And that's a lot of it. And it's really interesting. I mean, there's some stuff about, like, Bojack himself, and you've seen the whole show, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we both have
including,
seen
including, by the way, the Christmas special.
Yes, there was also a Christmas special. Maybe that's why I was thinking of December. Yeah. Was the one that was released. So Bojack is so pathetic in some points, to the point where his house guest writes a rock opera, and he actively sabotages his rock opera.
Yeah.
Just so that he won't leave him.
Yeah.
Right? But he also treats this guy horribly and, you know, like treats him like he's lower than dirt. So it's really like, I don't know. I love a show like this, and not every show does this sort of thing where it, if you just saw like a preview for it, you would go, that's probably not for me. It's like, it's animated. I don't really like animated stuff or whatever. I personally happen to like animated shows, but I know a lot of people are turned off.
Yeah.
By
I think I'm
shows.
Less interested in animated shows than you are.
Right.
And I turned this on thinking, you know, I'll give it a shot.
Right.
And then really wound up loving it.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good example of a show that it uses the format. Because really, if you think about this show, like, take away the dogs and the cats and the animals.
Yeah.
And make it a TV
make
show.
It people.
It's not, it would not, it would
like
be
live action.
It would be really sad. It would be so sad. It would be hard to watch. So it's an interesting way to talk about a difficult subject and make it kind of humorous. And I don't know. And there's just so much to like about it. Like from where I'm standing, like it's well written. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of satire in it. And we were kind of chatting just briefly before the podcast about this, but it's done in such a way that the satire is an element to it, but not the core of the show.
Totally.
So that the core of the show is still BoJack's journey through his depression.
Yeah.
And the satire is a great supplement to that, complement to that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. It's not a, it's more filling out the frame. It's not,
yeah.
It's in the background. It's, you know, but that's also what's compelling about it too. So there's two things that I think that really make a show good. One is when it rewards people who watch multiple episodes.
Yep.
So this is one of those shows where they'll set up a bit in like the first episode and you don't get the payoff until like the 10th episode.
Sure.
And shows like Seinfeld used to do that. Mm-hmm. Seinfeld would do that across seasons. Seinfeld would make reference to things that were like, you know, three seasons prior. And if you were a dedicated fan, you got that joke, but it didn't alienate other people.
Exactly.
Who hadn't seen
it. Didn't take
it
away from people who might just jump in the third season.
Exactly. Right? So I think that's a great, aspect of it. The other thing too, is that this background, this world building and setting that's going on in the background rewards multiple viewing, where there's little sight gags, there's little like asides that the characters make that if you're not really paying attention the first time, they're not central to the story, so you don't notice. But then when you go back and watch it later, it makes you laugh all over again.
Yeah, yeah.
At different things. In one of the episodes, he's on MSNBC, which is it's a funny bit in its own right. But the thing I like so much about it, didn't notice the first time I saw it, is that there's a scrolling thing at the bottom, like there always is on MSNBC or CNN. And the entries on it are hilarious. It's like milk, milk, lemonade, around the corner, gentrification. And then, you know, it just keeps going. And then eventually, like the entry is, you know, I wanted to be a writer. Right. And like, that's hilarious. And I mean, it's not original. That's been done elsewhere where people have made funny scrolling things.
Yeah. But there's room for both.
Yeah. And it's actually scrolling so fast in that episode that you would probably not pay attention.
Yeah, you
to
probably
it.
Have to see it multiple times to catch all the jokes.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them, mm-hmm. and it's really that's a sign of people who really care about the experience of the show. You know, mm-hmm. it's not bare bones.
So let's talk about you are a cartoonist.
Yes,
you run a blog where you have usually weekly cartoons
mm-hmm. every Wednesday
that you put out, static cartoons, not like animated.
Sure.
So, what do you think of the animation here?
I actually really like this animation. It's not groundbreaking or anything, but there's something kind of cool about what they do. So I'm not sure how they do it, but the characters are drawn. Or, you know, done digitally or whatever, but their coloring is done with this strange kind of like watercolor look
yes.
to it. And that's really neat. I think it adds some dimension to it that, you know, you wouldn't really, if you weren't looking for it, you might not really pay attention and notice it. But, yeah, it looks like they've been, painted by watercolor.
Yeah. I think you can really see it in the opening, credits in the, mm-hmm. in the theme, mm-hmm. Because, the whole theme, like the video of it is a front shot of BoJack's face.
Yeah.
And then a lot of things happening around him. And I think that's where I first noticed it. I was like, wow, look at the detail. It's sort of like mixed medium. Is that the right term where it's like regular sort of 2D animation inking that you might see mm-hmm. that's a little more vibrant and a little more standout-ish, along with some of this watercolor that just gives it a little more dimension.
Yeah, like
somehow.
A texture.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see it on BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter, because BoJack is brown because he's a horse, and so you see like this like kind of lighter shade of brown and a darker shade of brown, mm-hmm. and Mr. Peanut Butter has like the gold, but kind of a yellow and an orange that are sort of blended
sort of
together.
Mixed together.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's funny that I'm now trying to think of whether or not the backdrops are done the same way. I don't know if they are.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I kind of think that was intentional and that they want the characters to stand out, and that's their way of making them that happen. On the other hand, I don't know if someone like Todd, who's a human in the show, is really done the same way, or if it's only the animal characters
that are
done that way. So
yeah,
it's worth me going back and watching it again to see.
It wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Yeah. It's just another thing I wanted to play a clip is there's actually I just think the banter is really good, and it's just lightning quick and really funny, and especially in the moments where BoJack and Mr. Peanut Butter are talking to each other, because there's this, like we said before, Mr. Peanut Butter, again, voiced by Paul F. Tompkins, always very outgoing and happy, and nothing gets to him. Like,
right.
Because he's kind of dumb. So, like, he doesn't necessarily
like
know...
Like a dog.
Right, he doesn't... Exactly. He doesn't know BoJack as being, sarcastic or cynical, and it kind of goes right past him. And then BoJack is always like returning back this sarcasm and cynicism. So there's the clip from the second episode where I think it might be one of the first appearances of Mr. Peanut Butter, where he just comes into the house to tell him about a new show he's doing.
Get this. I am starring in a pilot presentation for a celebrity reality show. It's pretty cutting edge, huh?
Yeah, if it's 2003.
Don't tell VH1 that. Seriously, though, please don't tell VH1 that. We are calling it Peanut Butter and Jelly. Get it? Because I'm Mr. Peanut Butter.
Okay, who's Jelly?
No. It's like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's wordplay.
You may have too forgiving a definition of the word wordplay.
Well, it's a working title.
Well, it could be working harder. And that's wordplay.
And that's just like a sample, but that's like most of the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's really solid. And Will Arnett is just doing an incredible job as BoJack Horseman. Yeah. That was one of the reasons I wanted to watch the show, was because it was Will Arnett's voice. And I just think he's really fantastic. But
they're all voices that you'd know, too.
Yeah, Amy Sedaris.
Alison Brie, isn't
it? Alison Brie, yeah.
Patton Oswalt.
The guy from Breaking Bad. What's his name?
Which
Aaron
one?
Aaron something.
Oh, yeah, Aaron Paul. He's one of the producers.
Yeah, well, but he's the house guest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so he's the guy couldn't be a more perfect house guest, because, I mean, he was playing Jesse on Breaking Bad, being the stoner, like, kind of loser guy, and that's essentially who he is so yeah, his voice fits really well in there. And Alison Brie is the voice of his ghostwriter for his biography or
she's
whatever.
She's essentially Mary-Kate or Ashley Olsen. Like if their lives had taken a very like darker path when they grew up.
Oh, I think you're thinking of Kristen Schaal.
Oh, Kristen Schaal is that character.
Yeah, Kristen Schaal does. Yeah, yeah. So Diane
so plays
his writer.
The young.
Yeah, Kristen Schaal's character is the girl, is like the youngest daughter from Horsin' Around that he was his daughter.
Right.
And she went on to, I mean, she did mirror a little bit of like the coke habits and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That
some of
Olsen
the
sisters.
Well,
had.
Not necessarily them, but you know, like your Lindsay Lohans,
yeah, of course,
of the world.
Yeah, and but no, Alison Brie does Diane's
does Diane,
voice. Diane's
yeah.
the one who's writing the book about BoJack's life, and it's funny because she's Vietnamese and her last name is. I can never pronounce it correctly.
It
it's like Nguyen,
yeah,
or something like that. And that's like a running joke in this show that you know they don't know how to pronounce it. There's one scene where she shows her I don't know if it's her business card or like the back of her her like the dust jacket of her book.
Sure.
But just like very briefly, it has her email, and it's like Nguyen is the loneliest number at like gmail.com.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, it's just things like that. And
that's
like
a great joke.
Yeah. There's if I had the time, I'd like go through it frame by frame just to see all those little sight gags.
There's also just a really nice arc throughout the, they use the will they won't they, like template of how to do a sitcom really well. It plays out through the whole season, and even I think if you're the most jaded sitcom watcher, you would buy into this a little bit because the characters are so rich.
Yep.
And these two, Diane and BoJack, do really seem to have a connection to each other, and so it's really nice to see that arc throughout the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meanwhile, by the way, and we hadn't mentioned this, the brilliance of this is not only is Mr. Peanut Butter BoJack's foil artistically, but he's also actually Diane's boyfriend.
Yes.
So the fact that BoJack wants her, wants to date her, or be in a relationship with her is yet another way in which Mr. Peanut Butter is like drinking his Kool-Aid.
Well, and it's also kind of strange because you're
drinking his milkshake, if we want to reference There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back about whether or not I think he meets Diane first before he knows that she's
before
dating
he knows
Mr. Peanut
yeah.
Butter. But what's interesting is that he's portrayed as the kind of character, like this kind of cad character who like would hit on any attractive woman.
Yes.
And so there's part of that dynamic is almost like, does he desire her more now that he knows that it's his foil's girlfriend?
Yeah, it's really true.
Not just like, oh, I'm interested in this girl. Oh, darn, she's like my enemy's girlfriend. But almost like, okay, now is he really just only into her because of that?
Yeah.
And he wants to steal her away. And there's scenes about that and episodes about that.
Yep.
And the lengths they go through to try to do those things. So it's really great. And I'm really looking forward to this one. I don't know, you know, again, shows cannot live their welcome for quite a while,
sure.
You know, and I'm wondering if in this new stage of, you know, age of streaming stuff, that this is going to be less common where we just have a show that has like 12 seasons, or if it's just going to be this one, you know, is going to be a couple seasons.
Yeah, more like almost the British model of putting out shows. You do a couple of seasons and make sure they're good, and then you kind of cut it off.
Exactly. I would prefer that in... Actually, for most of the things we talk about, I think, I hope that this new format allows that, where they go, okay, you know what? We respect your story, and we recognize that you want it to end at this time.
Sure.
We'll make that happen.
Yeah.
And this one, I'm more than willing to watch another season of it. I don't know if at the end of that season I'll feel like watching another season.
Right.
But I think it's got enough legs to go through another season. So I'm hoping. I've probably already gotten picked up. I haven't checked to see.
Yeah, I haven't checked either. But but they did release that Christmas special, which is a good sign. And yeah. The Christmas special is good too. If you're interested, it's not really. It's unnecessary to the show.
Yeah.
But what is nice about it is that it is a Christmas special of BoJack and his house guest watching the Horse and Around Christmas special. So you get a sense of what the actual sitcom was like.
Yeah.
And you get this slight overtone of BoJack trying not to be lonely during the holidays.
Right. It's awesome. So highly recommend both of those as well. And you can find them on Netflix because this is a Netflix original show. So that has been it for this podcast.
Wow, flew by.
It flew by. I mean, feels like we started 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, we didn't, though.
No, we didn't.
We didn't. 5 minutes ago, we were talking about BoJack Horseman.
Right. But, you know, time's a flat circle. So we'll have this conversation again sometime.
Indeed.
If you like what you hear here, you can always hear more episodes on our website, primeflixpod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at PrimeFlix. You can email us at feedback@primeflix.com.
PrimeFlixPod.com.
We love feedback. We'd like to hear your thoughts, especially on anything we've discussed here or any of our previous episodes.
Or if you just have a suggestion as to anything you'd like us to talk about, we are more than happy to entertain that suggestion.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I speak for both of us when I say we'll watch anything once.
Yeah.
Just to see. So if there's something out there that you really think is worthy of our discussion, please let us know. And you can do that in any of those means that I just mentioned. Or if you're really interested in and really being part of the podcast, you can actually record an audio message to us, whether that's, you know, props or a review or
right.
suggestion, whatever. You can do that at our website. There's a little link on the sidebar that lets you do that. And if you have a microphone set up, and given that we are a podcast and that most people access us through iTunes, if you could go to iTunes and subscribe if you haven't already, or you could, you know, go there.
I have.
Well, yeah, I mean, I subscribe on as many devices as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, that really helps us out. If our subscription numbers are higher, we get higher in the rankings. If you leave a review or even just click the star ratings, that also ups our visibility so that we can grow that nation of people who are
the Flixian nation.
The Flixian nation. You know, and we can start our charter and start to have our weekly meetings and develop some semblance of government.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I hope it's an oligarchy.
I think that would be all right.
Okay.
We'll see.
Just because it's fun to say.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not really sure what it is, but I like what it says. Yeah. I like how it sounds.
Yeah.
So it sounds pretty pleasant. So yeah, so that's it for this week. I've been Ed.
And I'm always Dean.
And we will see you on the internet.